Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, March 9th, as we continue on here with our national syndicated radio program. James Edwards, Keith Alexander in studio. We're coming to you from our flagship station in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, and going out to the affiliate stations, as always, of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online to a worldwide audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org. The loss of Bill Rowland, as I sent out in an email today, still so new. The sting, so hurtful. It's not going to be easy to move forward. We know that, but we also know that we must. Last week, you know, how much time do you give a full show, a week, a month, a year? Well, none of it would really suffice. None of it is adequate enough to show the respect we have for a man such as Bill. We did our best, our very best last week to put forth a touching tribute. And, you know, his work and his legacy and his life's deeds will live on with us in each show that we do henceforth. And he will always be part of this show. And he'll always be with us here in the studio. Welcome again, everyone. You know, as I mentioned, we know we have to get back to the news, opinion, analysis, and commentary. That's what this show is here to do. And Bill would have it no other way. But I was thinking over the course of the last week, and something we're going to do, and we've made mention of it on the website, something we're going to do for the remainder of this month, each Saturday during the month of March, we are going to play during the third and final hour of each installment in March, a very classic interview that Bill participated in. And I'm not talking about something that relatively new listeners might have heard before. You'd have to have been a listener from the very beginning of this show to hear some of these pearls that we're digging out of the treasure trove that is our broadcast archives. Tonight, for instance, during the third hour, we're going to revisit an interview that Bill and I conducted in January of 2006. Keith, that was over 7 years ago now. Hard to believe that we've been here this long, but in fact, in October of this year, the cesspool will be 9 years old, nearly a decade. But we're going to go back to January 23rd of 2006 during the third hour, and we're going to listen to an interview that Bill and I conducted with Michael Andrew Grissom. Wow, if anyone's ever read contemporary Southern literature, you have read Michael Andrew Grissom, and he wrote the epic, the magnum opus, Southern by the Grace of God, a 500-page love letter to the South. And Bill and I had him on the show. And you're going to hear that 7 years after the fact tonight. So for those of you who were here in 06, you'll hear it again. But for the bulk of you, I think you'll be hearing it for the first time. That, though, coming up in the third hour. Between here, between then and now, Keith, we have a lot of news to get to that has been posted to the website and that you've brought into the studio with you this evening, Keith. But talk about the aspect of moving on as we prepare to get back to, for lack of a better term, business as usual tonight, even though it will, as I mentioned, never be the same.
You know, I heard you saying 2009. You know, that was only halfway back. We went to 2004. It's almost like a lifetime ago, 9 years ago, that we started this. And listening to those old shows, it is just incredible to how it evokes memories, evokes of all sorts of reminiscences about what we've been doing, and we've just grown together into kind of a one person type of aspect as a result of this. We have been doing this so long, and we have been getting together so regularly. It's just something that you know, boggles the mind. And losing somebody like Bill, who is really, you know, he was involved in the movement, quote unquote, long before any of the rest of us were. He was involved back in the 70s when he was at Ole Miss. In the 80s, he helped fight back the initiative to try to take the Confederate battle flag emblem off of the Mississippi state flag, and that was a successful effort. He was a warrior, and he was also an intellect. He was a person that could cover the waterfront, so to speak, on all issues that are near and dear to paleoconservatives, and particularly Southern paleoconservatives. And I think you're really going to enjoy some of these old shows that we did. It's amazing to me how well they hold up over time, James.
You think, you know, you're playing a show from 2006, well, it's going to be dated. We have some stuff in the broadcast archives that is absolutely timeless. And I'm not just tooting our own horn here, but the content that you're going to hear during the third hour of tonight's show really cannot be dated. It holds forever. And so we've got a couple of those shows we're going to be playing during the third hour in March, and then we're going to continue to move forward into April, which is Confederate History Month, a month that Bill always played a very big and important role in. But folks, again, you know, we could do every show for the remainder of our run, however many years we have left on the air, and make it all about Bill. And again, it's not going to be enough. But we've got a big show for you tonight, and I think you're going to really enjoy the cherry on top at the end, and again, the subsequent shows that are going to be coming up for the rest of the month. We got some real prizes for you this month here in the Political Cesspool. Well, Keith, for anyone that's been to the website this week, you know we've been covering news as usual. The first item I want to bring up for discussion tonight was one that was penned by Winston Smith, a column by Winston. He got a hold of a picture, and this has been floating around the internet, of the new targets that the Department of Homeland Security is issuing out to law enforcement agencies. And you know what targets look like. They have either silhouettes of people or perhaps even the real thing. Well, this one has the real thing, and you get six pictures DHS is producing, all of which reflect the most unlikely of criminals to shoot at law enforcement officials. You see a white boy, maybe about 8 years old, a young teenage girl holding the hand of her baby sister on a playground, a pregnant woman, a young 20-something white lady, a white grandmother in a robe, and then a white grandpa with a shotgun and a baseball cap and his glasses and a beard, kind of looks like Santa Claus. So this is who the DHS is training law enforcement officials to be looking out for, and in fact, they're using them as target practice, Keith. Now, in any other... We were talking about this at lunch earlier this week. If you look on a billboard for any company, it looks like the Rainbow Coalition. Even Chick-fil-A, which is supposed to be this great conservative entity, you go in there and it has a picture of a sampling of Chick-fil-A employees, and you got a black, a white, an oriental, you got this, you got that. It's just an even spread across the wealth of humanity. But the DHS shooting gallery is nothing but whites. And folks, you can see the picture for yourself at thepoliticalcesspool.org. A quick word about that, Keith. We're going to go to break and then let you really sink your teeth into this one.
Well, this, I think, is a very ominous development. It shows that the SPLC's efforts to make law enforcement see white conservatives, white red state Americans, as the enemy, as the prototypical terrorists, the new face of terrorism, is apparently succeeding despite the fact that none of it is founded in reality. None of the people that have been responsible for these massacres recently have been white red state Americans. They have been white liberals possibly, but they haven't been conservatives, and they haven't been of pregnant women, for heaven's sakes.
We're going to take a break. More from Keith on this subject when we return. Cesspool's just getting started tonight. Stay tuned, everybody.
Political Cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211 and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby, Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor Score test today.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly, 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. We're settling back down into the normal routine. And in the first segment there, at the tail end of it at least, we were talking about the new Department of Homeland Security shooting target. Excuse me. Going to read an excerpt from Winston's excellent column, which can be found at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and it reads that no one can dispute the fact that Barack Obama and his Obama bots vehemently hate white people. There are many and undeniable examples, and Winston goes into a few that we don't have time to recount right here. He continues, now the same Obama Department of Homeland Security that wants people to believe that terrorists are a white-only group is targeting white people again, quite literally. Take a look at the new gun practice targets being purchased by the Department of Homeland Security. And we already gave you a countdown of who can be seen, the picture again at our website. Winston writes that they remind him of all those home security commercials that cast only white men as home invaders. The targets are made and sold by Law Enforcement Targets Incorporated and are marketed as the No More Hesitation product line, designed to give officers the experience of dealing with deadly force shooting scenarios with subjects different from the norm during training, meant to help the transition for officers who are faced with these highly unusual targets for the first time. Well, I guess there was some truth in that, Keith, that these would be highly unusual targets as opposed to the norm. We can't say what the norm is. That would be racist, of course, quote unquote. But you have to wonder, though, why and when the Department of Homeland Security thinks that their stormtroopers might encounter a robe-wearing grandmother in her home or a pregnant teenager on a playground. All of them armed. Speaking of shooting pregnant women, many shooters have been convicted of two murders when they kill a pregnant woman and her preborn child dies with her. Will a DHS thug face the same consequences? Somehow I doubt it. Winston continues, I can see the DHS justifying the murder of the child by saying the kid would have probably grown up to be a homeschooled racist, just like the mother was. Winston's column continues from there, but the biggest part of this story, Keith, is the visual itself, these targets.
Well, I think the name of these targets or this series of targets says it all, the No Hesitation series. They want law enforcement officers to have no hesitation to pull the trigger and shoot and kill white people, even though white people are very vastly underrelated in terms of their their preponderance in the general population. For example, 2/3 of the general population, but they are not 2/3 by any stretch of the imagination of the violent criminals in America. We know who holds that record. It's a group that is 13% of the population, but is responsible for over 70% of the violent crime in America. Now, they don't want pictures of those people on the no hesitation list. They want to get law enforcement officers used to pulling the trigger on people like you and me, because we are the people that are supposedly slated for extinction. You know, there was a professor of mathematics, a black math professor at Vanderbilt University named Jonathan Farley. I suppose he's still there. And he was very vocal some years ago when Vanderbilt University was trying to rename Confederate Hall, which was a prominent campus building that had been donated back in the 1930s to Vanderbilt University by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. Farley's comment was that America would be a much better place today if Lincoln, Johnson, the abolitionists, the radical Republicans like Sumner and Stevens, had tried every ex-Confederate soldier for treason and had them executed. Likewise, there are Bill Ayers, who was an SDS weatherman, who was responsible for the killings of 2 security guards in a bank robbery that the SDS weatherman pulled off in the Northeast back in the 70s, who is now the top, or was until he retired, the top educational official for the state of Illinois. He told an FBI undercover agent that when the revolution succeeds, it's going to be necessary to kill about 1/4 of the people in the United States. And the 1/4 of the people he's talking about are white red state Americans. These are the people that they have slated for extinction. This is part of the program. Another part of the program is the fact that we're getting all of these mercenaries from throughout the world receiving military training and paramilitary training and SWAT team training here in the United States. We have a place down in DeSoto County, which is adjacent to Memphis and Shelby County in Mississippi, where they have Navy SEALs being trained. They're bringing in people from Russia. They're bringing in people from Eastern Europe to do the dirty work. Likewise, they have a paratroop training facility out in Fayette County, which is just to the east of Memphis, where they're bringing in Germans and other foreigners. They obviously want to have a lot of these so-called modern-day Hessians to come in here because they think they will have even less reluctance to pull the trigger on red state white Americans, James.
Well, Keith, I'll tell you one thing. If the United States of America had a domestic policy that was half as good as Israel's, we would have nothing to worry about. Say what you will about the state of Israel, and we say a lot about them because there's a lot that we disagree, in fact, just about everything except for their domestic policy. I'm telling you what, folks, they got a hell of a domestic policy. Now, we've talked in recent weeks, and I'll make a quick run through of things that the Israeli government is doing to their credit in Israel. It's just everything else about them that's bad, that we would never be able to get away with here, but that once we had. For instance, they're getting swamped, they say. And this is the Prime Minister of Israel talking with immigrants, and they don't like the immigrants from Sudan. There were 60,000, Keith, a grand total of 60,000 in Israel. I mean, God forbid, how many illegal aliens do we have here? How many millions, right? Anyway, so they said that these Sudanese migrants were a cancer in the fabric of our body and that they must be removed. I mean, could you imagine somebody like Mitt Romney saying these illegal aliens are a cancer in the fabric of the American society? Well, in some ways, as far as jobs are concerned, they are. And the state of Israel says that their leadership, this isn't just some kooky fringe Israeli saying, this is the government, this is the leading party. The head man. And so it went very quickly from rhetoric to action. And this was a couple of weeks after the cancer in the fabric of our body quote was issued. The state of Israel went door to door on street corners in places of businesses and residents and wherever they could find an illegal alien. They rooted them out and deported them. There was also a report a couple of weeks after that saying of the so-called black Jews that they have there, not people who are not residents of Israel, but the black Jews, the lost tribe, if you will, They really lost drop. Well, they were sterilizing them. They were telling them they were giving them, like, a flu vaccine, and they were sterilizing them. It wasn't even denied. I mean, this is stuff. And again, our sources on this are mainstream newspapers in Israel. The Yahoo News for my next one. Well, here's the thing. So we know that they have an apartheid state over there. This story came up, a lady who I have a lot of respect for, her family, top of the line, very representative of what our audience is all about, in Missouri, young family, and she sends me some great articles. Did you know that the state of Israel has implemented a bus line for Jews only? Only Jews can ride those buses. Do you remember there certain being a certain brouhaha here, Keith, in the late 50s about, you know, and it wasn't so much that, you know, blacks could ride on the same buses as whites. They just had a set in the back. Arabs can't even get on the same buses as the Jews. So Jews only bus line implemented in Israel. I mean, folks, that left me absolutely flabbergasted that it's so funny that they can do these things, which are quite healthy. I'm not saying it's wrong that they're doing it. I'm saying, okay, why shouldn't they? They should be able to do what they want to do in their own country. But there is no condemnation of Israel coming from the American media at all. In fact, you wouldn't even know that it was occurring. But the story is on our website. I don't like to use so-called establishment sources, but when they report on something like this, you know they got to be telling the truth for a change. We're going to take a break and let Keith dive right into this one right after these words. Stay tuned, everybody.
We'll be back right after these messages.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, Keith, I set the table. I want you to chow down now. So this is what's going on in Israel. They've got a completely segregated society. They sterilize their immigrants if they don't deport them on site. The non-Jewish immigrants call their so-called migrants a cancer in the fabric of their body, and now they have introduced a bus line for Jews only. Arabs don't sit in the back of that bus. They can't get on it at all, and you don't hear a word about it. Not on CNN. You know, could you imagine a state in the South saying, you know, this group of people is a cancer in our body. This group of people can't ride our buses. Well, we had that. And the same people that think it's so great for Israel to do it were the exact same people who orchestrated the change here in America. I wonder why that was.
Well, the silence is deafening from the mainstream media about this story. It takes an outlet like our show to bring this to light. And what this does, it gives the lie. It explodes a theory that you often hear projected by people about why Jews are always in the vanguard of radical leftist change everywhere in what they call the diaspora. In other words, the areas of the world to which they were dispersed by the Romans, starting in AD 70 when they tore down the temple and said, you people are crazy and can't be trusted to have your own nation anymore because you're nothing but chronic troublemakers. Well, throughout the diaspora, which includes the United States, which includes Australia, everywhere that they go, they are the vanguard of leftist change. And people ask, why? Why are Jews always in the vanguard of leftist change? And Jews have a tendency to excuse their behavior by saying, you know, we're just the conscience of every society in which we find ourselves. We are the people that hunger for justice and are willing to make the sacrifices to press for justice for dispossessed people throughout the world, the people that are disadvantaged. We are we're the good folks. We're so holy and good. Well, if liberalism were to be equated with holiness and with Jewishness, well, then the state of Israel, which is the one predominantly Jewish state in the entire world, Israel would be the most liberal place in the world, and it would have the most left-wing social policies and laws. But as we can see from stories like this, like they said in Porgy and Bess, it ain't necessarily so. In fact, Israel has the most conservative domestic policy when it comes to race relations. Anyone who is not a Jew, first of all, cannot emigrate legally to Israel. The refugees that they've taken in that are non-Jewish are described by the prime minister of Israel himself as a cancer on our society. Meanwhile, in the United States, Jewish groups like the ADL, the ACLU, other left-wing organizations that have a disproportionate Jewish membership really are trying to put people in our society that are a cancer on society. For example, people suffering from AIDS. We're supposed to open our doors to every person with AIDS throughout the world, bring them in, and absorb their tremendous expensive health care costs, because that's just right. On the other hand, in Israel, they don't let non-Jews, white people in the South are supposed to be the worst people in the world, and we're still, you know, they're making Department of Homeland Security targets of us, and that's because we're the worst people in the world. Why are we the worst people in the world? We're the worst people in the world because we made black people sit on the back of the bus back in the day, back in the 1950s and the early 1960s. Now, compare that with the state of Israel. They don't even let Palestinians, Arabs, African, black Africans set foot on their buses. These people, you know, they, it would be like if Birmingham had a totally separate bus line. But, oh, wait a minute. Israel doesn't even provide a separate bus line for these untouchables, these non-Jews that are in their nation. They're busily trying to get rid of them. They're giving them secretly medications that reduce their fertility. And you ask, ask some Jewish American leftist agitator like Tim Wise, famous for his whiteness studies and his critique of white Gentile society in America, about this. And I guarantee you, they'll shrug their shoulders. So what? We're Jews. We're special. This shows you the double standard. And, you know, I'm not impressed like James is by this. I think that the hypocrisy is absolutely stunning. This is the absolute definition of a Yiddish term called chutzpah. This is what Jews do. They have segregation for me, but not for thee. They have miscegenation for thee and not for me. They insist on having a pure Jewish state for themselves, but they urge a disastrous diversity upon every other nation, particularly every other white nation in the world. And they're not motivated, as they pretend to be, by benevolence and love. They're motivated by hatred for white Gentiles. And the sooner white Gentiles understand that, the better off they'll be. And in fact, until we understand that, you'll never make any progress in rolling back liberalism.
Well, of course, Keith, quite naturally, the Arabs in Israel are looking for their Rosa Parks. And wouldn't you know it, the coincidence of all coincidences, that the same week that this story about the Jews-only bus line in Israel comes out, Rosa Parks gets a statue where in the U.S. Capitol. So this new Rosa Parks statue, now, you know, she laid in wake for, you know, about 2.5 months when she passed at the age of 157
in
the Capitol Rotunda. But here's the thing. And keep in mind, folks, you know, you talk about the treasures that can be found in our broadcast archives, that we have an interview with Drew Lackey, the police officer who fingerprinted Rosa Parks the night of her arrest. It's absolutely stunning. It's one of a kind. I guarantee you we're the only show that's ever interviewed him. And he told you the story. You know, say what you will about Rosa Parks, she was never in any danger. That was a stunt. Her stunt on the bus was something that had been planned months in advance. In fact, they had another person that was originally supposed to pull it, but they found out that she had just been a lifelong troublemaker, and she had, you know, been pregnant out of wedlock. She was just a bad example. You know, they wanted somebody that was angelic, and Rosa was the one who, you know, came up second or third choice, and she was the one who did it. But anyway, somebody on our website, Keith, wrapped it up pretty much the way I see it. Whether you love her or loathe her, you know that it was a stunt or you didn't, and you would know it was if you listened to the officer. You know, everybody in the 50s knew that it was a put-on. It was a setup. It was something used quite effectively to get media attention. But the fact of the matter is, she and King and many of the others were paid operatives, and they did this with the full weight of the American media and the full weight of the federal government behind them. You know, you talk about their heroism. Well, my God, when you're going up with a stacked deck, I mean, yeah, some of the people in the South frowned upon what they were doing, but they had the whole world with them as far as that goes. And this is what one of our listeners wrote on the website. Not knowing anything about Rosa Parks' personal life and bearing no animosity toward her, it's very sad that such a manufactured, forced, and planned event is being fronted to America, and so many of us have fallen for it. That there's no real public counter to the lie of the official narrative of this stunt should be proof to anyone that we're in a bad situation. People need to wake up. The civil rights movement wasn't about equal rights. It was about the domination of whites and nothing more. And Keith, that's something you always say. It wasn't about equal rights for all, special privileges for none. That's what we believe. It was, they wanted to trade places with us, and they have.
In fact, that's what John C. Calhoun said back in the mid-19th century. He said that the true aim of the abolitionist is not freedom for the black race, but rather that the black race and the white race change places in society. I don't know how he happened to be so prescient, but that's exactly what happened. Now, the Rosa Parks story is a perfect example of the falsehood that lies at the heart of the civil rights movement and of all radical egalitarian movements orchestrated by the left with Jewish money, Jewish intelligence, Jewish power and influence. Rosa Parks was not just a humble seamstress who got sick and tired of being sick and tired and said, I ain't no ways tired no more. Remember when Hillary Clinton tried to talk in some fake black accent and said those very same words during her campaign for presidency and she was hooted down about it? Well, Rosa Parks was not just some random person that happened to be arrested for refusing to get up from a bus seat. We'll get into this in greater detail on the other side of this break after a word from our sponsor.
Don't go away. Guys, we'll be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Rounding out the first hour. Listen, the best of the show is still to come this evening, folks. We got another hard-hitting hour of news coming up. And then in the third and final hour tonight, we're going to revisit an interview that I'm very proud of. an interview that Bill Rowland and I conducted in January of 2006 with celebrated Southern author Michael Andrew Grissom. He's written so many books. His epic is Southern by the Grace of God. He's also penned When the South Was Southern, The Last Rebel Yell, and many other titles that Southern aficionados such as myself will know. And, you know, Southern by the Grace of God is really a Bible of the South. You can't say enough about it. And it's thicker than the Bible. It's thicker than the real Bible. Keith is holding it in his hand now. We got autographed copies in as incentive for this month's first quarter fundraising drive. We got a box of autographed copies in from Mike Grissom. I talked to him earlier this week. He was, of course, a good friend of Bill Rowland's in addition to being a guest on this show. But that interview that we conducted in 06, which I'm sure so many of you this evening are going to be hearing for the first time, really represents what the cesspool is all about. And we're not going to be able to play the entire thing, but we're going to play some of the highlights. And I think you're going to enjoy it, folks. That's coming up in the third and final hour tonight. Stay tuned. But first, Keith, getting back to the main theme of this hour, we've been talking about some of the domestic goings-on in the state of Israel, the new bus line that they've implemented over there. And it just so happened to coincide with the week that the latest tribute to Rosa Parks was unveiled, her new statue, in the U.S. Capitol building. And they said that they placed her right across the statuary from a scowling Jefferson Davis. He's just looking at her with these evil eyes. I can't believe that they still have the last American president in the Capitol Rotunda. But he's there, and he's facing Rosa Parks with those evil, evil Southern eyes.
Quite frankly, anybody that knew the truth of the Rosa Parks Montgomery bus boycott story should be scowling at her, because the whole thing was a fraud on the American people. I guess this is as good a time as any, James, to try to debunk that myth and to tell people the truth about the Montgomery bus boycott and Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks was not some random seamstress who got sick and tired of being sick and tired and just refused to move when some ill-bred honky came on the bus and demanded her seat and demanded that she move to the back of the bus. Instead, Rosa Parks was the head of the local NAACP chapter in Montgomery, Alabama. She was this prim, proper, chaste-looking, light-skinned black lady, and she was educated. And furthermore, she had been trained in the tactics of nonviolent protest, the Mahatma Gandhi School, up at a place called the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee. That's near where Suwannee or the University of the South is. It's in Tennessee, not in the Deep South. And it was basically a rendezvous point, a jumping-off point for civil rights activists throughout the civil rights movement. The Freedom Riders, for example, all funneled into the South through the Highlander Folk School. The Highlander Folk School, as I've called it before, was actually like the Paris Island of the civil rights movement. Just like Paris Island is to the Marine Corps, the Highlander Folk School was to the civil rights movement, particularly all of their offensives against the South back in the 50s and in the 60s. You have to remember, this was an invasion from into the South by outsiders, people outside the South, people from blue state America, typically. Birmingham, Alabama did not go up to Great Neck, New York to start trouble with the Jewish population up there and to challenge their folk ways, their beliefs, and their society. It was the other way around. Great Neck, New York came down to Birmingham and other places like Montgomery. What had happened in the Montgomery bus boycott was that some slatternly, overweight, 16-year-old, unwed mother black woman who was known to be particularly profane in her and demonstrative in her behavior caused a ruckus when she was asked to move from a seat at the front of the bus to the back of the bus. This was about 6 months before the real event, so-called, happened, the real phony event happened with Rosa Parks. The local branch, the Montgomery branch of the NAACP, thought about using this teenager's arrest as their test case, but they decided that this particular plaintiff or this particular aggrieved victim was not from central casting, and they wanted somebody who was. So they engaged in a illegal activity known as it's a bar ethical violation called barratry. They basically set up litigation, just like if somebody were to run into the back of my car with my knowledge and I made a claim on my uninsured motorist coverage, that's barratry also, if the lawyer is involved in it. Well, the lawyers for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund were in on this plan, and they decided that they would have Rosa Parks, prim and proper Rosa Parks, the head of the Montgomery, Alabama NAACP, stage an arrest. They would have a plant on the Montgomery Police Department who would do the dirty work of arresting her. And everybody was in on the plan. Everybody was in, you know, everybody knew what was going on. Rosa Parks was in no danger from anyone because everybody was in on it. The fix was in, as they say. So she was arrested, kept her demeanor very coolly throughout this, of course, because it was not a spontaneous event. She wasn't arrested without knowing full well for weeks in advance that she was going to be arrested. So she was arrested, she was fingerprinted, and basically she went through the court system as the NAACP Legal Defense Fund took this thing on up the chain to try to get the laws changed regarding segregation of public facilities in southern states that had Jim Crow laws. This was the first of many. They did it to swimming pools. They did it to public parks. They did it to public schools. They did it to just about everything that you can imagine. And this supposedly made America a much better place than it was before. Although I've lived in under both circumstances, I can tell you, for example, Memphis, Tennessee today is a mere shadow of what it used to be back in the 50s under the so-called baleful influence of segregation back then.
It was better for both.
And it was better for both races. In 1950, the black illegitimacy rate in America was 22%. The white illegitimacy rate, children born out of wedlock, was 1.5%. Now, the black illegitimacy rate is 72%, and the white illegitimacy rate is 25%. So this is the effect, the wonderful therapeutic beneficial effect of liberalism on America. Just in a nutshell. But what Rosa Parks did at the Highlander Folk School is really interesting. What they did was they schooled them. They gave them a tutorial on the effective use of nonviolent protests to affect social change. And the key to all of this is Alan Stein, who is a Jewish conservative writer who has passed on to his reward, and may God rest his soul. He was a wonderful man. He wrote a book about it, and he said the whole purpose of doing this was to provoke a violent reaction. And they did this by spitting on police, by cursing them, by throwing stuff at them. And the complicit Jewish media, the national news media, did nothing, didn't roll the cameras when all this was going on, but when they would finally provoke some type of angry reaction from the police, that's when and only then that the cameras would start rolling, and they would show this to credulous people up in places like Michigan or Maine or Minnesota, and they say, oh, look at those brutal southern rednecks. Aren't they terrible? When they didn't see the brutal provocation that brought all of this on. This is what the real history of the civil rights movement is.
Everything Keith just said is true. It's a matter of fact, you talk to somebody 60, 70, 80 years old that was in the South, they say, well, of course that's the way it was. I mean, what are you telling me that for? Well, the fact of the matter is, though, for everyone else who didn't live to see it, present company included, you know, I've done the research on it and have been taught by people wiser than myself, but it's just like everything else. The lie's been repeated so many times that it becomes true. And whether or not you count Parks as a hero or not, does she sacrifice as much as George Washington or Davy Crockett or Robert E. Lee? You know, is sitting on a bus one time, getting arrested in a pre-scripted stunt, getting fingerprinted, paying a fine, going home, and letting the NAACP cover the rest. Does that put you, you know, has she done as much as Washington? She is revered much more than George Washington today. George Washington is nothing compared to Rosa Parks. You go into any school, Keith, any elementary school, you count the pages in the history books dedicated to Rosa Parks, and then you count them dedicated to Washington, Jefferson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're coming up into the first hour, folks. Much more forthcoming tonight. You don't want to go anywhere. Promise you that. Stay tuned.
The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.